Hail, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls tonight. For the time being, we have with us one of our supporters, Carl Grunwald, and we're going to be talking about what's happening economically in our country today. Now, certainly, one of the people I rely upon, probably more than almost any other, is a man named Dr. Paul Craig Roberts, and he writes economic columns. You could find them up on the Internet, but I read them in the Washington Times. About, every 10 days he comes up with one, and recently he wrote, you know, talking about the coming election, the great tragedy is that really if the presidential candidates, George Bush and John Kerry, really understood what was going on economically, they wouldn't be vying to win the election. They'd be vying to throw the election, because it really doesn't matter who gets elected. The next administration is going to bear the brunt of one of the greatest financial catastrophes of all time. Pointing out that we are losing jobs progressively, we're transferring our jobs to other countries, and it doesn't matter what the statistics show. Oh, my goodness, look at all the new jobs we've created. As he points out, these are low-paying jobs, because the high-paying jobs are being shipped overseas. They're being outsourced. They're going overseas with the companies that were moving offshore. And we haven't even begun to get back or regain the jobs that were lost during the recession of 2000 and 2001. He points out that there is just no way that we're going to be able to restore an economy in this country, because our leaders are intent upon shipping our jobs and our industries overseas. And he says, you know, if you don't have a manufacturing base, you become a third world country, and that's exactly the way we're headed. Furthermore, he points out that the war in Iraq is going to continue. It's going to go on. It's not going to end. And there's no way we're going to come out of this looking well. Oh, yes, we may have replaced Saddam Hussein, but what have we replaced him with? We've replaced him with chaos, and we'd have been far better off once we got rid of Saddam Hussein, just to picked up and pulled our troops out. But if we do that, there'll be civil war. And as Dr. Paul Craig Roberts says, there is no good solution to the problem that exists in the Middle East. And I certainly agree with that. Of course, I am also convinced that we are going to intentionally keep our troops there. We're going to create a situation where we have to keep the troops there, because it's only a matter of time before we go to war with Iran and Syria. And of course, this is going to have a profound impact here at home. Oh, it's wonderful to watch the films and see the chaos existing over there. The tragedy is the German people thought it was wonderful when they went to war and they invaded Alsace-Lorraine in 1939 and Austria, and then the Sudetenland, northern Czechoslovakia, and then the rest of Czechoslovakia, because none of this affected their homes. And when they went to war then with Poland and moved into Eastern Europe, why, that didn't affect them until the Allied bombing began and their cities were destroyed. And I was there after the Second World War. I saw the rubble. When you start a war, you never know how it's going to end. And I don't think the average American has ever thought beyond, oh, really, isn't it wonderful? You know, we've won this war just within about 3 or 4 weeks. And the president landed the plane on the carrier deck and announced we'd won the war in Iraq. And that was almost a year ago. Well, with us today, of course, is Cal Grunwald. And we're going to be talking about what's happening economically. Cal, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Well, it's good to be back again, Stan. Thank you.
Well, tell us how you see what's happening, how this economic situation is unfolding, you know, what's really happening right now. Gold and silver aren't doing much of anything, and of course, we'll be back in just a moment. All right. Well, Cal, what do you see happening?
Well, as you pointed out, Stan, you know, NAFTA and GATT have done a tremendous job of destroying our not only manufacturing base, but shipping all these high-paying jobs overseas. And it's going to continue to do so. Along with it, of course, we've got tremendous account deficits and trade deficits, which just grow all the time. And now the government has been printing M3 money and pumping it into the economy just to keep it afloat because there's nothing else to do it except money. And, of course, when you do all that, inflation is at the door raging.
Well, the thing that I think most people don't understand is that we put almost $1 trillion in circulation this past year, and a couple of trillion in this last couple of years, trying to stimulate the economy, and it's not doing a very good job. They dropped the interest rates to almost, 1%, for the banks borrowing short term, and that really didn't get the economy going, because there's no way to get the economy going when there is a program of globalization. If we didn't have the globalization, the ordinary things that they've done in the past to stimulate the economy would work. But it's not going to work. And we've been consistently lied to. We were told, well, if we'll just go into NAFTA, why, that's the North American Free Trade Association, look at all those clients down there in Mexico. Boy, they're going to be buying our cars, and they're going to be buying our refrigerators, and they're going to be buying our television sets. Of course, we don't make any television sets, but that didn't really matter. The American people greedily looked at that wonderful country down south of the border, what, the 7,500 million people down there, all potential candidates, and, of course, it was all a lie. But the American people believed it. And then the next thing was the World Trade Organization. Oh, if we could just go into the World Trade Organization, look at all those people throughout the rest of the world we can ship our goods to. But the trouble is that what we're doing is not shipping our goods, we're shipping our factories to these other countries, and with that the jobs of future generations. That's why so many of our young people aren't even going into computers in college now. They're not learning computer technology. Why? Because all those jobs are going over to India. And, of course, you cannot have a first world country when your leaders are intent upon shipping your jobs and your industries overseas. So none of the things that traditionally have been done in the past to get the economy moving, low interest rates, flooding the country with money, are really going to be able to solve the problems we have now. But with inflation coming on, of course, we begin to see now the interest rates rising. They've had two interest rate increases, and supposedly later this week they're going to have another interest rate rise. They have to do that to prevent inflation. We'll be right back in just a moment with Cal Grunwald. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Well, Carl, you were just saying, of course, that they've been putting out all this new money into the economy, and that really doesn't seem to have done much. They've lowered the interest rates about as low as they could go, and now they're having to start to raise them as far to try to control the inflation. And they keep telling us, oh, inflation's so low, it's only 2 or 3%. But, of course, that they take food, and they take energy, and they take anything else that's increasing in price out of the equation, so that the figures look good. But I think that the average person who goes to the store or goes to the gas station or certainly goes to the grocery store knows the prices are going up no matter what the government tells us. What are your thoughts?
That's of course reality, and most people don't put those two and two together, and it should spell disaster to most people, or pending disaster, but it doesn't. They're just content trying to survive, and that's what most people are in this country, in the survival mode, taxed to death, and just trying to make it their house payment or their light bill, because that's where the government has put them, with all the higher taxes, and they don't have good jobs anymore, so they have to work 2-3 jobs just to do what they did with one good one before, and now somebody in another country has it. So it's, people are just kind of like surviving.
Well, I think it's very interesting how they've been able to raise the price of natural gas. They've been able to raise the price of electricity here in California. I don't know too much about what happened to electricity prices elsewhere, but they certainly massively increased the price of electricity, almost double it or even more here in California. And, of course, that came about because of deregulation. They sold us deregulation under the guise, we're going to lower electricity prices, we're going to bring in competition, and boy, who could be against competition? And both the Democrats and the Republicans in the legislature, to a man, voted for this. how do you deregulate a monopoly? You can't. All they did, of course, was allow the major utilities to sell off part of their plants to make, I know PG&E made about $4 billion, and immediately transferred it out of the parent company to the stockholders. And then, of course, what they did is suddenly there was shortages of electricity, and they had to negotiate with these other companies, and they couldn't get long-term contracts, and it managed to put us in debt about $20 billion. That's, of course, was sold to the people in the name of, oh, we're going to lower the price of electricity. They knew from the very beginning it wasn't going to, but they couldn't very well tell the American people, or at least the people in California, their real goal was to raise prices. So they had to lie to us, just like they lied about all the new jobs we were that we're going to produce in the United States if we simply opened our border with Mexico and Canada, and all the new jobs that were going to be in the United States if we went into the World Trade Organization and China and the rest of the world went into it. And so really, I'm very, very concerned about the future, the economy of our country, the future of our country. I think we're moving from a first world country to a second world country. And as our industrial base disappears, as we bankrupt ourselves paying for wars, as we see the massive balance of payments debt, and then this massive debt, it's about, according to Professor Kotlikoff, who is at the chairman of the Department of Economics back at Boston University, and we interviewed him this last week on our afternoon program. He estimates that our debt in this country today, considering the future obligations which we have committed to paying, is $72 trillion. That's $72 trillion. Anybody who'd like the quotation or the pages from his book, we'd be glad to send it to you. $72 trillion, there's no way it can be paid off, and the politicians know it. They just don't want the American people to realize the betrayal of future generations or generations yet unborn. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Cal, you know, what do you think people ought to be doing at this time to protect themselves? Because I can see in the future the only way out of the mess we're in, the only way to pay off that $72 trillion is simply to destroy the value of the currency, inflate the currency, and then if we can pay that $72 trillion off with worthless money, and of course the politicians will come out fine. They'll increase their salaries. I'm just afraid that the general public will be impoverished.
Well, again, that's what's happening and going to happen, and we're in the kind of the final throes of a currency crisis here. A couple of weeks ago, I think it was CBS interviewed Robert Rubin and Paul Volcker, and the article never got to the paper. It was a good friend of mine who kind of the inside, he said that, you know, there's going to be an article in the Wall Street Journal, but it never did appear. Both of those men said within a year, year and a half to 2 years at the very most, we're going to be in a dollar crisis. We'll see the currency fail. And they suggested either do one of two things: buy foreign currencies, which, by the way, Warren Buffett's been doing by the millions, or buy gold.
You know, so did really that? This is what Rubin and Volcker had advocated.
That's right.
All right, fine. Now, for our listeners out there, Paul Volcker, a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, one of the elitists, he's about 6'6" tall, but he was the chairman of the Federal Reserve Board at the time that Ronald Reagan became the president, and, of course, he'd been, I don't know whether one or two terms, as chairman of the Federal Reserve Board. Robert Rubin had come from Goldman Sachs. It was Secretary of the Treasury during the Clinton era, and, of course, he presided over the great economic crisis, the currency crisis they had in Mexico. And, of course, Mexico owed a tremendous amount of money to Goldman Sachs. So what did, of course, President Clinton do was to make massive loans to Mexico so that they could, pay their money back to Goldman Sachs, which they did. And so Goldman Sachs was bailed out, and, of course, the only people who were left holding the bag was the American taxpayers. I don't know if Mexico has ever paid the money back again, but they certainly, Robert Rubin, who'd come from Goldman Sachs, who was Secretary of the Treasury, incidentally as a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, he bailed out Goldman Sachs using our tax money to do that. But then that's how the game is played. It's about time the American people realize that fact. But certainly not, Mexico is still a basket case economically, and that's why people are flooding across the border into this country, because there is no economic hope for the average individual in Mexico today. They have a two-tiered society, the very rich and the very poor, And that's just sort of the way we're heading here in the United States, don't you think, Cal?
Well, absolutely. We will see the middle class disappear in, I think, a very, very short time as things escalate. And, of course, it's key that statements or quotations like these two men made never got to the media. You can imagine the reaction of the American public if they even paid attention. If something like that were to get into the newspapers, especially the Wall Street Journal, it's as stable as it is.
Well, I think it's so interesting. They were recommending buying foreign currencies. Now, why were they recommending buying foreign currencies rather than T-bonds or T-bills, as, of course, all the experts here in the United States tell us to do?
Well, again, all those things are dollar-denominated, so you don't want to buy something that's dollar-denominated when you're going to have a dollar crisis.
And
the dollar ends up failing, so.
People I'm talking to are talking about a 25% to 40% further decline in the value of the dollar, which means if you are in dollar-denominated assets, why, of course, you lose 25% to 40% of the value of whatever you have. That's what happened to the people down in Argentina 2 years ago. That's how they wiped out the middle class in Argentina just 2 years ago. But then there's nothing new. They've done this repeatedly through the years as they've destroyed the middle class in country after country. And today, in Argentina, over 50% of the people there live below the poverty line, and of course, really no hope of ever recouping the funds that they'd worked their whole life for. They thought that they were secure because they had money and assets, and those assets were simply wiped out by inflation. And obviously, this is what Robert Rubin and Paul Volcker are considering is going to happen here in the United States. Is that right?
Well, that's right, and it is happening. But again, there's enough censorship in the media that the truth never did get there, and people are going to get caught by surprise. It's just like the Jewish people in World War II. You know, it could never happen, and you know, by the time it was happening, they didn't realize it, and it was too late. So,
and of course, at that time, there was no escape for them. And of course, what they did is they slapped currency controls on the country. In other words, they put currency controls so you couldn't get any money out of the country, and even if you wanted to leave. How could you leave if you didn't have any money? If you went to another country, how could you live without money? Jim Poplava, who I think is one of the smartest observers in the country, was our guest this last week. He said that one of his experts is anticipating within a year to 18 months they will slap currency controls on this country because they don't want the American people to be able to get their money out of the United States. I think that's, in essence, what he's saying.
Well, that's very true. And besides, as you know, Stan, the banks in this country only have 2 cents on the dollar on deposit for withdrawal. So if we have any kind of a bank run at all, they'll just shut their doors and it'll be all over. So.
Well, of course, what the government will do will turn on the printing presses, or they don't even have to do that. They simply make bank entries for the Federal Deposit Insurance Company, the FDIC, so that they can provide the money, but it won't have any value because they will have to massively, inflate the amount of currency in circulation, which leads to massive rise in prices and the destruction of the value of the dollar. That's the terrible danger we're in today, is that we are just leveraged beyond any concept that any country has ever had before. We are the greatest debtor nation of all time, and the average American has no idea what's going on, and the war in Iraq is simply a diversion to keep us from seeing what's happening here at home. As our boys go overseas to fight for freedom, well, I fear we're losing our freedom here at home. What are your thoughts on that, Cal?
Well, again, it's all a delusion to get people's focus off what's really happening here. I mean, you've got the war in Iraq, which is a horrendous mess that will never be solved in 200 years. And it's just going to get worse. It's like you said, it's going to drain whatever we have left. Expending it on futility.
And, of course, that's what happened to Great Britain, the First and Second World Wars, destroyed the greatest empire the world has ever known. At one time, the sun never set on the British Empire, and two great wars destroyed Great Britain, just as what we've undertaken will destroy America. We'll be right back here, and welcome your calls here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this evening, Cal Grunwald. And Cal, of course, has been talking about his fears of inflation and the impact of inflation upon the American economy. And, of course, I think it's so interesting that Robert Rubin and apparently Paul Volcker, do you know where they had actually made these remarks? I'd never heard that.
No, I don't. Again, a good friend of mine who's got some very valuable inside information was telling me this, and he said, watch the Wall Street Journal, because they were interviewed just a couple weeks ago, but it never hit the papers.
Well, that is tragically what happens so often, is the important newspaper doesn't get, the important information doesn't get into the Wall Street Journal, and the people who control the editorial pages of the Wall Street Journal, the last thing they want is the American people to know what's going on. And so often these articles, you know, one article will validate another article, will validate another article, and you have all of these economists who are part of the establishment assuring the American people that there's nothing to worry about, just to hold the course, while, of course, the people in the know, the Warren Buffetts and the George Soros and the Bill Gates, they're investing in precious metals or investing overseas. And as we know, Warren Buffett has actually invested in foreign currency contracts. Now, that means not simply in foreign currencies, but in highly leveraged derivative contracts anticipating the dollar is going to collapse. And Warren Buffett's a pretty smart guy. He's a lot smarter than I probably will ever be economically. He started out with $100 in 1956, and today the holdings in that company invested in 1956 are worth $40 billion. So he knows what's going to happen. It's such a shame the average American doesn't. So, Cal, what do you think we should talk to people about? How will we get them to understand that we are on the verge of a financial precipice, and I fear that, you know, we're going to be soon plunging into economic oblivion?
Well, Stan, as I've been on your show for many months, I really do appreciate your audience, because they're very, very sensible people. The ones that I've talked to, the ones that have called in to get my paper, which, by the way, is a 26-page paper entitled Gold and How to Avoid the Scams in the Coin Industry. There are many, many people out here who are listening and who are educated and who do believe what you're saying, and they are awake. And what they're doing is they share the same concerns, they can see the same things, and many of them have bought gold and silver as a fallback or a hedge, something tangible that's always going to be worth something, and not only worth something, but when the dollar fails, it will 5, 6, 7, 8 times its value, and that gold and silver is going to be the means for survival for many of these people. So there are a lot of people that are doing that, but it's, of course, in the vast minority, because, as you know, probably 1 or 2% of the people in the country, they really do know what's going on. The rest are just in oblivion.
Well, I think the tragedy is that most people honestly believe what they read in the Wall Street Journal, not realizing, of course, it's controlled by the establishment, the same people who control the New York Times and the Washington Post, and they all interlock, of course, into what I refer to as the Brotherhood of Darkness. But the Wall Street Journal, I used to read it, and I used to honestly believe what they had on their editorial pages, until you begin to find out so often, for instance, the reporter will be tied into the American Enterprise Institute. What's the American Enterprise Institute? Why, of course, it's the think tank for the Project for the New American Century that got us in this mess over in Iraq and a great diversion, so we won't see what's going on here in America today. Well, Dr. Stan, and again, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California, 464-8295. Cal, how can people get in touch with you and get that article you've written going into the scams in the coin business? Because if you're out there listening audience, and you're thinking of purchasing anything, you need to understand there are a lot of scams in this business. And, of course, if you're not very careful and you don't know what you're doing, why, you're going to get talked into buying some things that are way overpriced, and it will take a long time before you'll ever be able to recoup what you're invested in. So why don't you just tell your listeners what you cover in this 26-page treatise and how people can get it?
Very good. And I just would like to make a comment that you know, since gold has been has climbed so steadily and so fast over the last 2 years, along with that, many, many coin shops, you know, that have sprung up around the country. They're just all over the place, and I think the proportion of scams is really increasing.
What are the scams?
Well, as you mentioned, the real high-priced coins, the high mint state coins, which are for collectors only, most of the companies that are scamming people try to talk people into this as, you know, tremendous investment potential. And in 1985, these coins increased by 300%, and they give you all these razzle-dazzle figures. But, these coins are for collectors only. They're not for people that are looking to preserve wealth, you know, with just reasonably priced gold that will be very liquid when the time comes, and they'll be able to, you know, either sell if the dollar's any good, or else when the dollar does collapse, it'll be worth, you know, a tremendous amount of money. But if you're spending, you know, $5,000-$6,000 for 1 ounce, you know, gold coin, an MS65 something, you're never going to get your money out of it, you know. But so why not buy 10 or 15 of them at the same, you know, with the same money? So that's one thing. Foreign gold is another big scam. You know, people, you know, companies, you know, buy it because it's bullion, and then they mark it up anywhere from 40% to 150%, make false claims about it.
Now you're talking about, say, foreign coins, a Dutch guilder or something like that, and they tell you how very, very valuable it is and how rare it is. It isn't really rare at all. It's all hype. Would that be a fair statement?
Yeah, that's very true. And, of course, the public, because there's no regulation, basically, in the coin industry, the public is unfortunately gullible. There's really nothing like a consumer reports out there, and, you know, for the coin industry. You say, well, you know, this is good, this is bad, beware of this, you know. And nothing is tested and tried out there, and I guess that's about what my paper does. Having been in the coin business over 8 years, I've seen, I suppose, every scam imaginable, and every time I say that, another one shows up. But, you know, I've put just about everything in that paper to warn people and educate people, and, you know, very, very middle-of-the-road approach to, how, to you know, what is good and what is bad. And it's been very helpful to many people. In fact, a lot of people have said it's probably the best paper they've ever read.
All right, now how can they get hold of it?
All they have to do is call me at 717-648-2682. That's 717-648-2682. And I'll be glad to send you a paper and talk to you as long as you want to, you know, at no charge and no obligation, because education is so important. I'm a former, you know, teacher myself, so I do everything through education, and you know, people can make up their own mind once you are faced with a certain, you know, set of facts. This is what it is, and this is what it isn't. Then you make up your own mind. So that's the way I am. I hate high pressure. I won't do it. But if people call me up at 717-648-2682, I'll send you that 26-page paper entitled Gold and How to Avoid Scams in the Coin Industry. Then you can read it for yourself, make up your mind what you want to do. And I do sell gold and silver myself. You know, there's no middleman involved with me. I'm buying directly from a number of wholesalers where I get really good prices and really good products.
So, the thing that you always worry about, you know, when you're doing this, I think that, of course, certainly collector's coins are great, but you have to be a collector. The average individual doesn't know an MS-62 from an MS-65, and unless you're an expert on it, you can't tell whether, you know, this is accurate or not. And then, of course, it's going to take an awful long time before, you know, you're going to be able to get the money out of it that you put into it, unless you really know what you're doing. If you know what you're doing, it's fine, but I don't. I'm certainly not an expert on this at all, and I've just seen so many people get really into real problems buying these expensive collector's coins if they're not an expert on it. Would that be a fair statement, Kyle?
That's very true, and there are many, many sad stories of people that have taken their whole wealth and put it into some of these real rare coins, and, you know, ended up a story later because they have really nothing to show for it.
Hold that. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Carl Grunwald. We're talking about really what's going on economically. And I really think that people have to be very, very much aware that there are very real economic problems. And our attention is being diverted away from that by what's going on over in Iraq, or certainly this whole Tweedledee, Twiddledum presidential election, each side claiming that they're better than the other one. But both of them are going to continue the war in Iraq. John Kerry can say whatever he wants to about, well, now he suddenly decided he wouldn't have gone into Iraq, but of course a month ago he was justifying the fact that he would have gone into Iraq. But what we're really doing is seeing this great diversion as our attention is focused elsewhere. But the really serious threat to America is not the Saddam Hussein. The really serious threat to America is not what's going over in Iraq, other than the fact that we're staying there and we're losing an awful lot of boys, and it's costing us a fantastic amount of money, money that we really don't have, money that we're borrowing from future generations. My concern, I think the greatest threat to America, is that we have the greatest trade deficit of all time. It's going to be $500 billion of trade deficit in this one year. And then, of course, we have this massive federal debt. And they say, oh, isn't it great? It's only going to be $422 billion this year. We thought it was going to be $465 billion. But they don't tell you that they've stolen about $200 billion from Social Security and Medicare. And everything I'm being told is they're going to have to borrow another $50 billion to fund the war in Iraq because they've already run out of funds. But they don't want to let the American people know that. And then, of course, the couple of billion dollars for Hurricane Ivan or doesn't really matter, one hurricane after another. And we're just going to throw money at that. We're throwing massive amounts of money into Homeland Security and giving money to communities. They don't even know what to do with it. Some of these are buying armored personnel carriers or armored personnel vehicles for a city or a county. Why do they want an armored personnel vehicle? But they're getting all this money from the federal government in the name of Homeland Security. And, of course, whenever you give money to government, government spends it. That is, of course, one of the basic prepositions of government is that you give them money, they're going to spend it, and they spend it entirely different than you and I would. If it's your money or my money, we're going to spend it carefully. If it's the government's money, why, of course, they're going to just go ahead and waste it. We've seen this with one of the local government bureaucracies where they updated all of their plane fares. Instead of traveling coach, they all traveled first class. I think it was $10 or $15 million for travel for the officials. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Carl Grunwald, and he's been talking about really what's happening economically to our country. And I think that the American people have to stop and see what's happening. And certainly the people who are smart are not investing in domestic currency. As we mentioned earlier, why Warren Buffett, one of the smartest men in the world, probably the greatest investor of modern times, is now investing in foreign currency future contracts, highly levered contracts, because, of course, there's a time limit on these, so he's only got maybe a year or 2 years at the most. But he is planning on the dollar simply falling and falling dramatically. I think we have to watch and see what Warren Buffett's doing because I believe he's an insider. I think he knows what's going to happen. Isn't it interesting that when that article did appear in the Wall Street Journal, it was in section C at the bottom of a page, and I know 20 people who read that newspaper and never saw it. And if somebody hadn't called it to my attention, I wouldn't have gotten it. And if you would like to see a copy of that article, we'd be glad to send it to you. Or it's covered certainly in last month's newsletter. That's the August newsletter. We'd be glad to send any of our listeners a free copy of the August newsletter if you just give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. Ask for the August newsletter. And if you want a copy of that article out of the Wall Street Journal, about Warren Buffett investing in foreign currency futures. Why, give us a call. We'll be glad to get that for you. Again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you have a question for Cal, because he is certainly in the gold and silver coin business, and I'm not. He knows a far more about that than I do. Cal, what should people be buying? Should they be buying silver? Should they be buying gold? Should they be buying silver rounds? Should they be buying silver bars? What should they be buying if they decide they do want to do something, at least with part of their money, to try to give them the currency insurance that they need to survive difficult times? You may not make any money, but at least you'll preserve the value of your investment. What should people be doing?
Well, the first thing I recommend, Stan, is that people buy silver, and that's what they call junk silver, for 90%. It's the coins that were imprinted prior to 1965, the dimes, the quarters, the half dollars. I don't really recommend silver dollars because they're way too expensive per ounce. But those are the coins that in the future, when the dollar does collapse, that people are going to use for barter. You know, for loaf of bread is a couple of dollars, a dime. You know, by the time silver gets to $50, it'll be worth that. It's a very, very practical approach. You don't have to buy a whole bag. You can buy half a bag, a quarter bag, whatever you have, and it doesn't take much cash outlay to do that. So once you get your silver in place, and then you should think about buying gold. I would recommend a combination of bullion gold, like American Eagles or Maple Leafs, sometimes Krugerrands, $10 gold pieces, $20 gold pieces in very low grade, just so that you get the closest to spot as possible, because those coins do have some protection right now, and they do appreciate tremendously in value over bullion. So it's a combination of things that I recommend, but it's all common sense down to earth. And the reason that most coin companies don't sell these things is because there's not much money in them for them. And it's more gold, more silver for the person who buys them, more protection for the future, but there's not much money in them, for these companies. That's why they sell, under false pretenses, the high mint state coins and the foreign gold. I mean, just everybody's doing it. In fact, there was a kind of a very alarming scam that I became aware of maybe a month ago, and I've talked to a number of people who've been taken by this company, and it's, well-known person on the radio. I'm not going to mention any names. But what the person does is, they talk about the economy and the New World Order and everything else, but then they sell gold. But when they sell gold, they don't deliver it for 6 months, 8 months, 9 months, a year. I've talked to six or seven people over the last 6 months who've dealt with this individual, and he won't send the gold. It's 6 months later, 9 months later, they still don't have their gold. And then he's making up all kinds of excuses like, well, dear, these coins are really hard to get, and I can't get them, and I want to make sure that I get the right ones. It's all a pure lie, or they're not available. And that's a big lie, too. Now we're getting a little bit into an availability problem. I can tell you that for sure, but up until now, we haven't had one. And to some people, it's taken over a year. So I've ended up counseling a lot of these people what to do, and it just so happens most of the time to work, because I've been in this business and I know kind of what to say to get some reaction and get some results. So I've been able to help a number of these people out. But
well, of course, this is an old trick. In other words, you take the money and then you hope the price of gold is going to fall, and then you can buy it cheaper, and then you can give them the coins. That is a technique I know they've used for a long period of time. The trouble is, you can get into real trouble if the market swings up.
Yeah, that's what's happened, because this one individual sent $70,000 to this person, and 9 months later he hasn't got a coin yet. Sure, take $70,000, invest it, put it in the bank, or do something, money markets or anything else. You can make yourself quite a bit of money in that period of time, and like you said, you're all right unless gold goes up. And then, which is what happened. Then he said, well, I can't get these coins anymore, so. And I want to put you in the Swiss francs. So Swiss francs are bullion coins that, anyway, so you can buy those for, whatever spot is. And so just because he read my paper, he said, no, I just said, don't do that ever. Just insist on what you bought, get those coins, and I said, otherwise the Attorney General is going to be breathing down your door, and I'm going to send my attorney, I just rattle some swords. And it seems to work just about every time, because these people, they know that they're doing something illegal. They know they're hanging on to somebody's money. It's just plain fraud. So, and they do have some fear of, getting found out. So they usually, do come through, but it's just another scam. It's just horrible.
Well, of course, now, one of the things that they do talk, what about the commemorative gold coins? These are not minted by the U.S. Mint or the Canadian Mint. You mentioned the Maple Leaf. That's a Canadian coin, very, very attractive coin, but people will try to sell you commemorative gold coins. In other words, they're struck by a mint to commemorate something, some specific event. Are those of any real value other than gold, the bullion?
Well, they do have some they do have some collector value, not as much as old gold does, but I do kind of like them once in a while simply because they're 24 karat gold, and they're beautiful. And so in a barter situation like the $5 commemorative, that's a quarter ounce, a 10 is a half ounce. If you look down the line to a time when the dollar collapses and you want to have something small. 24 karat and very, very attractive, no questions asked. It's an American coin. I think that potential to barter with it is really going to be good. I do recommend that in certain situations.
Well, now, what about when you're thinking about silver? What about silver rounds in contrast to silver bars? A silver round, of course, is just 1 ounce of silver, usually something stamped on it by a responsible mint. How does that, of course, compare with buying silver coins? And, of course, is this what happens if the price of silver goes up? Would you be better off with silver rounds than you would be with silver coins?
Well, that's another good question. It's a very practical one. The reason that I recommend the silver coins is because they're generally less expensive per ounce than the rounds. And the rounds, being a 1 ounce, kind of are cumbersome because when silver gets to $50 an ounce or $75 an ounce or even $100 an ounce, and I don't think that's unrealistic at all, you got a 1 ounce coin, and you know, if you're going to buy a loaf of bread or a dozen eggs or a gallon of milk, how are you going to make change? That's why I recommend the smaller coins, the dimes, quarters, and halves, because you can use them. They're different denominations for different prices and different products. So they're much more versatile. Now, silver bars are really impractical. You've got a 1 ounce bar, a 10 ounce bar, and a 100 ounce bar. Well, what are you gonna do when you get in a bar situation? You have to have a hacksaw and, you know, cut off some of the 100 ounce bar, and how are you gonna weigh it? It's very impractical. And people don't realize that. They say, well, if I got silver, I got silver, which is nice. But you've got to be able to use it later on, and that's the practical aspect of it. That's why I recommend what's called junk silver 90%.
All right, fine. So now, is there getting to be any shortage? Because, of course, a lot of people have been buying the silver coins for a long period of time. Can you still readily get bags of silver coins, of 50-cent pieces or 25-cent pieces, are they readily available in the market today?
Yes, they are. And again, this is over the last couple of years, I've heard this hype and these lies, you know, there's a shortage of silver and everything else, and it's going to go up. And so that whole thing is kind of put forth by the coin companies because gold was flat. You know, now it's real strong now. The gold is flat, so they had to do something to get people hyped up to buy the silver that was readily available, and it still is. So it's just there's nothing true to that.
But well, we keep hearing that there's going to be a shortage of silver, that we're not producing as much as we're using, and that the tremendous backlog of silver. At one time, I know the federal government had a billion or 2 billion ounces of silver. That seems to be pretty well gone. Do you believe there is going to be a shortage of silver in the near future, or do you believe that this is simply all hype?
It's mostly hype, but, you know, when the dollar does collapse, everybody's going to try to buy some silver, and then it's not going to take long before it is gone.
And yet, of course, the price of silver was up, you know, doing pretty well. It was actually up to $8 or so, and now they've knocked it down at $6.20, somewhere there. And, of course, they can always seem to be able to drive the prices down. They've been doing this for years. They've been doing it very effectively. Will they be able to continue doing that indefinitely?
No, they won't. Because once our dollar dramatically starts collapsing, then the price of gold and silver are going to take off. The bankers right now are keeping a lid on it. You know, gold finished at 405.25 today, and silver at 620, as you mentioned. So gold is real strong and silver's down. But again, it's all a manipulated price. Once things really start happening, and you know, if we get terrorist attack and martial law, gold could easily go up to $500 an ounce just in a matter of a very, very short period of time. So it's tremendously volatile, you know, both gold and silver. And that's why people should get out of paper, get out of paper as much as possible. If you want to protect your family in the future, you better think about, getting some gold and getting some silver, and a good amount of it too, because it's going to be the only thing that's going to be worth anything in the future.
Okay, fine. Well, if you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question or comment for Kyle, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And I personally believe that gold and silver coins right now are nothing more than currency insurance. But I think we all need insurance. We have life insurance. We have car insurance. But I think we need currency insurance because many of the smart people, and I've talked to them, the people who have really watched this for a long time, are talking about buying CDs in euro or in Swiss denominations. And increasingly, the smart money is fleeing out of the United States into stable currencies. There's a gold backing for the Swiss currency. There's a gold backing for the European currency. There's no backing for the American currency. We don't even know whether there's any gold left. The government keeps telling us there is, but can we really believe what they say? So if the smart people are investing in foreign currencies, then I think we should follow suit. Why would you do that? Well, let's imagine that you buy a CD and you're going to get maybe 1.5% on it here in the United States, and that really seems, well, after all, if maybe you get a government bond, it's going to pay 1.5%, 2%. But with an inflation rate that is not, 3 or 4%, as they're telling us, but is 7 or 8%, at least this is what we've been told that Alan Greenspan is really saying behind the scenes, but he's not going to say this to the public. With an inflation rate of that much, why, of course, you're going to be losing 5% a year. Not only that, but on the 2% that you do make, they're going to tax you. So the best thing to do would be to get into a foreign-denominated, in my estimation, a foreign-denominated CD or currency of some sort, and follow what the smart people, the George Soros's and the Bill Gates and the others are doing, because if you don't protect yourself, who will? And if you don't do it now, why, once we have exchange controls on the outflow of money, why, of course, it's going to be too late. And people say it could never happen here, and I would ask why it couldn't happen here. Certainly we've done everything to destroy the value of our currency. You can't keep spending more than you have coming in. But not only that, if you look at it from a spiritual point of view, do you think God is going to allow us to continue living as well as we have when the majority of people here do not honor him in anything we do? Well, we've got Ray calling from Coeur d'Alene. Hi, Ray. Do you have any questions at all?
Yes, I'd like to find out, other than coins, if a person, for example, was in need of a newer car, and one would buy an economy car like a Honda Civic or something like that, a brand new one, and then you're not going to pay cash, but you'd be able to pay off in deflated money, so to speak, paper money that you'd have coming in, would that be a wise investment?
Carl, do you want to respond to that?
Yeah, I'm not sure I understood the question.
Well, basically what he's saying is, look, he says, if money's going to decrease in value, why not get yourself something you could use and need, like maybe a nice Honda Civic? And then, of course, you'll take out a long range, loan on it. Maybe certainly the interest rates are very low now, and you'd be able to pay that loan back with money that really didn't have very much value, as long as you had the money coming in. What would be wrong with that? In other words, you'd get that car at much less value because you'd be paying it back with dollars that were worth much less. How would you respond to that?
Yeah, that certainly will happen when we see the massive dollar devaluation and inflation take over. That certainly will happen. If you have a vehicle that's all right now, I would just say hang on to it, make sure it's paid off, and then put any excess money that you do have in, gold and silver, and then just wait and see what happens. That would be far better.
Ray, the one thing I would say is just be sure you're going to have a steady flock of supply of money coming in so that you can pay the car off with those deflated dollars.
Yeah, I understand that.
Okay. But there's some people who say that. I mean, buy property now and pay for it with deflated dollars. Just remember that if you get too far into debt and something happens to your income, then, of course, you're going to lose the whole thing.
Understand.
Okay. Anything
else?
Thank
you for your help. Sure, bye.
Bye-bye. Let's go to Dan, who's calling from Santa Cruz. Hi, Dan. You have a question?
Yes, I do, Dr. Stan. How about investment in pre-1933 gold coins, which I understand do not require to be, have to be reported on any profit on the income or possession of, and therefore there's a, a stipulation that one can opt to not report any income derived from the sale of them when the price goes up, and whether or not one should be advised to take the gold in possession or leave it in storage.
All right.
The
two questions.
This is all in a very reputable company.
All right, fine. The two questions. First of all, what about, of course, buying the pre-1932 gold coins? If you deal in those and you make a profit, do you have to pay taxes on them? And we'll be back here in just a moment to answer that question. All right, Cal, did you get the question? Do you have to pay income tax, or do you have to pay capital gains tax if you make a profit on gold?
If prior to 1934 gold is non-reportable, that's very true.
No, but I mean reportable. Who would you report it to?
Well, again, there's a lot of companies out there making a lot of false claims about those coins. But you, the only time that you have to report to the government with a 1099 is if you bought. 10,000 ounces of silver. There's some Mexican onzas. There's a few different categories. So reportability is kind of, they throw that out there, and then they try to get you to buy these high mint state coins. I recommend the extra fine, the very fines, sometimes the almost uncirculated $10 and $20 liberties also. But the only time that the good thing about those coins is that you can deal with somebody else privately on those, and the only time that you have to report anything is if you sell them and make a profit. But that's between you and your tax preparer. That's according to your conscience.
$10 valued coins would be the most recommended, or at least acceptable.
$10?
$10 gold coins, yeah.
Whenever the price of those coins is good, I like to recommend them because you've got a half ounce coin, which is going to be more usable than a 1 ounce.
Yes.
And, then I would recommend them. And
okay, how about taking possession as opposed to letting the storage be kept by the company that you invest in?
Yeah, that's another big scam. Don't ever let anybody store your gold for you, because a lot of these companies that claim to do that or say they do it are scam companies, and they're just simply a front. I mean, there was a lady a number of years ago that only had this company store about a couple thousand dollars of gold coins that she had, and then she wanted them one day, and they gave her kind of the runaround. Well, it took a little while, but she, sent her lawyer after them, and it turned out that they had about $4 or $5 million worth of gold that they didn't have, that they scam people for, and just because one little old lady, decided that she wanted a couple thousand dollars of her own gold, the whole thing was uncovered. So that's one of the scams, is they're going to hold your gold for you. Never, never, ever do that. Always take possession of your gold and silver when you buy it, because it's with you. You have control of it. Never let anybody else store it for you.
We're out of time, but thank you so very much for calling, Dan. Thank you so much for being with us, Cal. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and, of course, our guest this evening was Carl Grunwald, and, of course, if you want to get in touch with him, his telephone number is 717-648-2682. That's 717-648-2682, and Carl does support Radio Liberty, and he has a good reputation, which is why, of course, we put him on, because I think that people have to start looking to the future. If you'd like to get a copy of my August newsletter, which really deals with what Warren Buffett really believes, with what Alan Greenspan really believes, we'd be glad to send you a free copy of our August newsletter. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8255. 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Now, you can go up on our website at radioliberty.com and you can pull down my newsletters. If you can go back to the mid-1990s, I think we started in 1994, and you're welcome to pull them down and copy them and circulate them and get them in other people's hands, because some of them have a great deal of great information, and I think this August newsletter is an excellent one. You can pull it down off the internet at radioliberty.com, or we'll be glad, of course, to get that, send you a free copy if you don't have access to the internet, if you just call us at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. We actually carry some books which I think give you tremendous insight into what we're talking about. The Creature from Jekyll Island by Ed Griffin. That's The Creature from Jekyll Island by Ed Griffin. The Federal Reserve Conspiracy by Professor Sutton. And another, of course, book by Professor Sutton, simply on gold and the background of gold and why you certainly would want to think about holding gold. And then, of course, a book was written 100 years ago about an event that took place over 200 years ago, 214 years ago. It's called Fiat Money Inflation in France. It's the story of what happened in France in 1789 when they went to a fiat money currency system similar to what we have today. And as you read that book, it's like deja vu all over again, because you'll see the same moral breakdown, the same loss in values, the same loss in any sense of logic as far as money is concerned. Everybody was getting rich. Everybody became prosperous, or most people did. And, of course, they just simply printed money backed by property that had been stolen or confiscated from the Catholic Church and the future incomes of the government. And it worked very well for a time. Fiat Money Inflation France is a classic book. It's available by calling, and all of these books are available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. And, of course, we also have a video. It's called Phenomenon. And you'll actually hear Milton Friedman talking about how the Great Depression of the 1930s was actually created by the Federal Reserve System. We have a privately owned central bank that controls our economy, our destiny, and our future. And the average American believes honestly in his whole heart that the Federal Reserve is a branch of government, which it is not. It is a vehicle by which a small group of evil men, in my estimation, have taken taken control of our economy. They have a different agenda. They are part of the Brotherhood of Darkness. If you have not yet read my book, A Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get a copy, or the Brotherhood of Darkness Special, which includes the book, the video, and the audio tape. And you need to copy the video and the audio tape and get it in other people's hands and help them to understand that this is simply not economic and it's not political. It is spiritual. And behind everything going on today are spiritual forces. And once you understand that, then it all makes sense, because the common denominator behind GATT and NAFTA and the World Trade Organization is creating a world government. The common denominator behind what we're doing over in the Middle East is going to involve World War III and the creation of a world government. The common denominator behind what's happening in our courts today, as our Supreme Court goes to other countries to see how their laws are written so we can determine how our laws should be written, the fact that they're going to bring in monitors from the United Nations to monitor the upcoming election this year, it all has to do with the New World Order, the New World Economic System, the New World Currency, the New World Religion. Till tomorrow, may the Lord be with you. Hail, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. We welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being, because, of course, we have with us on the line from Southern California, John Spring, who has his own radio program down there. And we're going to be talking about really what's going on in Iraq, what's going on in the Middle East, what's going on in the Far East, and the Russian involvement in financing financing Iran and financing Al-Qaeda. Because, of course, we know that going back to the mid-1980s, why, of course, Russia was putting on programs, training programs and meetings in the Middle East, where they were inviting all of the various terrorist nations to come together to learn techniques of terrorism that would be used against the United States. Now, where can you study, find out what I'm telling you is the truth? Well, there's a wonderful book. It's called Attack America and the West. It's written by Joseph Badansky, who is director of the Terrorism and Unconventional Warfare Commission of the House of Representatives, actually the Republican convention, the Republican members of the Congress in the United States. And Joseph Badansky has been studying these things for a long time. And this book he wrote back in the book actually came out in 1993, talked about how by the mid-1980s they had all sorts of training camps in Iran where they were actually training terrorists how to hijack our planes and crash them into buildings. And they had 747s and they had 707s there. They were planning on this, and we knew, our government knew all of this all the time. We were tracking everything we were doing. After all, who brought the Ayatollah Khomeini and the radical Islamic leaders to power? Why, your friendly CIA. Back in 1979, when we toppled the Shah of Iran, who was our friend, and brought into power our enemy. Now, why would you do anything like that? Unintentionally. Unless maybe this was part of a long-range plan in preparation for World War III. And, of course, out of what happened in Iran, we, of course, helped to bring the Ayatollah Khomeini to power. And then, of course, we precipitated the Afghan War. And then the CIA moved in and began financing the radical Islamic movement along with the Pakistanis and the Saudis. And what happened was that the CIA was over there and was training these Muslims from all over the world who were coming to fight the Soviet invaders, training them in these radical Islamic beliefs, how wonderful it was to fight and die for Allah, because, of course, then you'd go to heaven and have your 57 or 94 virgins or whatever it was. And we were actually training them in this radical Islamic belief. USAID was purchasing textbooks, $51 million of your money went to purchasing textbooks to indoctrinate the youth in Afghanistan with these radical Islamic beliefs. Why would you do anything like that? I mean, you could buy a textbook in the United States to push Christianity. Well, the excuse was, oh, they wouldn't use the textbooks unless we put the radical Islamic beliefs in that, and that's a lie. And if you doubt what I'm saying, you can go to my website and read the newsletters that are there, or certainly we'll be glad to send you those articles on the ABCs of jihad and going into the background of what we're talking about. But go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. John, I'm doing all the talking. I want to hear what John Spring has to say. And as soon as we get back, you'll be hearing John Spring. Well, hi, John. I'm sorry I got wound up talking. So tell us what your take is on what's happening in the Middle East.
Well, there are many things happening in the Middle East, the Far East, Central Asia, and, of course, throughout the world. And as you pointed out so well at the beginning of this program, Dr. Stan, the so-called former Soviet Union, or Moscow, currently has a lot of influence as to what currently is occurring throughout the Middle East and elsewhere throughout the world. Christopher Story made a rather profound statement some time back after 9/11.
For our listeners, why don't you tell him who Christopher Story is? What I know, but they don't know Christopher Story.
Well, during Margaret Thatcher's administration in the UK, Christopher Story was the Prime Minister's key advisor. And so his advice carried a lot of weight with the Prime Minister. Unfortunately, there were some times when she did not heed his advice. She thought, for example, that she could trust Mikhail Gorbachev, which, of course, turned out to be a wrong assumption on her part. But Christopher Story, after 9/11, made a statement which said that no major terrorist operation can occur any place throughout the world without the approval of Moscow. And I found that to be a rather profound statement, and yet I think there's a lot of credence to that, Dr. Stan.
What he is suggesting is that they are helping to coordinate the world terrorist movement?
Exactly. And in one respect, it's really of no surprise, as you mentioned out, most of the so-called jihadists of today were the former Marxist-trained terrorists of yesterday. The Marxist leaders that were trained by Moscow, the East Europeans and the Cubans during the Cold War.
Right, but of course Al-Qaeda is not necessarily Marxist as such. It seems to be a more fundamentalist Islam, or is that simply an impression that we've been given?
I think it's an impression that we've been given, Dr. Stan, although it appears as if Osama bin Laden was anti-communist during the Afghan War. It appears that in recent years he has established very close ties with the People's Republic of China, has made several trips to China, and the Chinese, according to Gordon Thomas, who was a British correspondent, was able to verify through documents that the Chinese did finance Al-Qaeda's operation for 9/11.
Well, of course, would this be, of course, because they really favor Al-Qaeda, or because, of course, Al-Qaeda hates America, and they really hate America, and we'd be far better off to have Al-Qaeda doing it than for them to do it. After all, what they would want would be a proxy to attack America and weaken America, because the real purpose of China is to dominate hegemon, as you call it, of the Far East, but America challenges that, and so they would, of course, get somebody else to do their dirty work for them.
Yes, they would always use surrogates or substitutes or proxies, as you mentioned. And Russia, of course, did this quite extensively during the Cold War as well. So it should be of no surprise that we find out that China and Russia could very well be financing many of these terrorist operations. And it requires a tremendous amount of resources, finance, and coordination to carry out such an operation. And it's rather doubtful that Al-Qaeda had the resources to carry it out by itself. Although,
well, of course, what about Saudi Arabia? What about Pakistan, which apparently had been pouring tremendous amounts of money into Al-Qaeda?
Well, this is true. The royal family has been financing many jihadist operations over a period of years, going back well before Al-Qaeda became known as an organization. For example, in the Philippines, the Saudis and the Libyans were financing many of the operations that were occurring in the southern Philippines in such areas as the Sulu Archipelago and also on Mindanao.
Now, of course, this is Abu Sayyaf. This was the
this is well before Abu Sayyaf. Right. This was going back probably 40 years ago.
All right, fine. And, of course, we know, of course, that the Saudis are financing this radical Islamic movement all throughout the world. They're financing it in Nigeria. They're financing it in Africa. They're financing it certainly in the Philippines. They're financing it in Indonesia. They're financing it right here in the United States, where they bring their Wahhabi clerics, and really this radical Islam is Wahhabism. It's another name for it, a synonym. And, of course, they're bringing them into our prisons. They're about 80% of the mosques here in the United States, funded by the Saudi royal family with radical Islamic clerics. That doesn't mean that the average Muslim himself believes these things, but he's constantly being taught this at the mosques, and of course a certain number of them will embrace this. They're teaching them in the schools, the Muslim schools in America. They're teaching the hatred of the West, the hatred of America, the hatred of the Jews. So really, one of the largest funders of this whole incredible radical Islamic movement certainly is Saudi Arabia. And I don't question that the Russians certainly wouldn't love to use proxies to destroy America. We know that the Soviet Union is doing everything they can to help Iran build their nuclear weapons and helping to fund Iran today. But certainly Russia pretends to be our friend. But I don't think they're any more our friend than communist China is, do you?
No, not at all. In fact, there are probably more weapons of mass destruction, especially nuclear weapons, missiles and warheads, targeted and pointed at the United States right now than there were ever during the Cold War.
And the thing is that the American people don't know that. They don't know that we have no anti-ballistic missile system, at least none that the American government will admit to, although there are certain things that the average American has never heard of. For instance, the Nautilus, which is both airborne and space-based laser system that is operational today in Israel, and you will never hear mention of it. You can go up on the Internet. They'll tell you, well, it won't be operational until the year 2007. That's the Nautilus laser, and they can actually bring in 20 or 30 missiles. They can target them at one time and take every one of them out as they're coming in. And yet you're never hearing about this in the American media, but I was first a man associated with the Israeli intelligence told me this, and I looked it up, and sure enough, but of course it's not going to be operational 2007. He says it's operational right now. That's why the Israelis are not concerned, but the fact that the Libyans, the Egyptians, the Syrians, and the Iranians, and the Pakistanis, and the Saudi Arabians all have missiles aimed at Israel today.
Yes, they do. And we've been concerned up until recently, and what you just said would more or less explain why Israel does not have this immediate concern, but there was speculation that Israeli nuclear subs or diesel electric subs would be deployed into the Gulf with the intention of taking out the nuclear sites over in Iran.
I think it's only a matter of time before they do that. We're on the edge of World War III, and the average American has no idea what's going on.
Yes. As you were mentioning regarding Iran, most Americans are not aware that North Korea, China, and Russia have very close ties with Iran, and they have been developing a rather effective nuclear missile program, which now, for all practical purposes, has placed Iran in the nuclear club, basically. It has missiles that it can launch right now that can reach distances such as Israel. Europe is not out of the realm of possibility in the not-too-distant future. And, of course, with their naval vessels, it is possible that Iran could even carry out a mini-missile crisis against the United States if they so chose.
Well, you know, just the incredible thing about this is that, of course, the guidance of these missiles. Now, during the mid-part of the Clinton administration, the Chinese could not get their missiles to hit anything. They didn't know how to steer them. And then, of course, we're told that Bill Clinton, for a couple of $100,000 in campaign contributions, gives our most valuable missile technology for the guidance system to communist China, who gives it to communist North Vietnam, who gives it to Iran and Pakistan, and, of course, now, why would we do something that stupid? Do you really think that Bill Clinton is that stupid that he would give our most important, our most secret missile technology to communist China, knowing full well that they would share it with the Russians, and they'd share it with the Koreans, and they'd share it with the Iranians, or maybe nothing as it appears to be?
Yes.
I believe a laborer is setting this thing up for World War III. It's about time the American people understood that nothing is as it appears to be. As we start out in our programs, reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king.
Yes.
But there really are people who want World War III. They want to draft your children. And, of course, I believe that this is going to end up in a nuclear confrontation. Why else would it be that we have no apparent anti-missile defense here in the United States? Oh, George Bush says, building one, well, it's going to have about 20 missiles that could deal with about 7,000 or 4,000 or 5,000 incoming missiles. What good do you think 20 out of ballistic missile systems in a system that is untried would do against even 1,000 incoming missiles? And, of course, they would not be able to do any good at all. So why would you leave America completely undefended unintentionally? And I think that these are the questions that nobody wants to ask, or why we have done everything we could to build up the best enemies money could buy. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Our guest this afternoon certainly is John Spring. Our guest this evening is John Spring. And of course, our local number is 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. John, you know, I don't think most people have ever stopped and questioned why it is that, you know, we have helped the Chinese communists to be able to develop the technology to threaten us with our own technology any more than most Americans have never asked why we, of course, done everything we could to build up the Russian nuclear capacity. And in fact, anybody who's never read the book from Major Jordan's diary will find that during the Second World War, we gave them the plans for the Manhattan Project and for building the nuclear bomb. Why would we do something that foolish unintentionally?
Well, obviously, someone in the Department of State, Department of Commerce, and other branches of government had a hidden agenda, which was very pro-Soviet and pro-one world. That's about the only conclusion I think we can come to. Just as later on, we sold out Generalissimo Chiang Kai-shek in favor of Mao Zedong's Red Army.
Right. And I think that the average American doesn't understand that the United States State Department brought Chairman Mao and Zhou Enlai to power in China. And anybody who doubts that, we have the government reports. You can challenge that, ask for the copies of the reports. We'll send them to you. We call it the McCarran Committee Report. So consistently, we have helped install communist dictators throughout the world, whether it be in Cuba with Fidel Castro. Anybody has to only read the book, The Fourth Floor, by Ambassador Earl Smith, who I personally had an opportunity to interview back in 1980, and we brought Fidel Castro to power. We brought the Ayatollah Khomeini to power. We brought the Sandinista to power in Nicaragua, and then created the Contra to fight them. And we brought the communists to power in China in 1949. But we can't tell the American people that. They might begin to question what's really going on in the world today.
Yes, they might. Now, speaking of China, Dr. Stan, there's one disturbing development that has occurred recently in Beijing. It appears that currently the man in charge is now Hu Jintao. And Hu Jintao was formerly an administrator over in Tibet. And he was the first leader to convey his congratulations to the Beijing regime during the Tiananmen Square massacre, and he's currently in charge of the Beijing regime.
Well, of course, whoever is going to be in charge is going to be a ruthless tyrant. And why we deal with ruthless tyrants in China, but as we say, gee, we got to go to war with Saddam Hussein because he's a ruthless tyrant. We've got a lot of ruthless tyrants in the world. We're building one up in communist China. We're building up their industrial base so that they can build the weapons they're going to be used against America's homeland. Doesn't make sense.
No,
unless,
doesn't.
Of course, there's another agenda. We'll be back here in just a moment. I welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, I guess it's John Spring, and John was just saying that the gentleman who, of course, is now in charge in Beijing is a ruthless tyrant. Now, is he the premier, the president? What's his official policy or position?
Well, I think he's the prime minister or the president, I think president's the most appropriate term to refer to him as, but he has consolidated all power. Previously, the person that he succeeded, Jiang Zemin, was head of mainland China's armed forces, but now that power has been transferred to Hu Jintao, and Hu Jintao is a very ruthless individual, far more ruthless than Jiang Zemin ever was.
I think the thing with any authoritarian society, it is always the most ruthless of who comes to the top, who gets the power, because he's quite willing to kill all of his opponents. It's said that Saddam Hussein, you know, if anybody spoke out against him or disagreed with him, he would just kill them on the spot. He would lie, he would deceive people. He was ruthless, but of course he was respected, he was feared, but of course that's why he was an effective leader. Now, certainly he's an evil and wicked man. But, you know, I've heard stories that, you know, even at meetings, he would ask for dissent, and somebody would dissent, and he'd just go over and kill them. But that's how you get to be the dictator of a country. And I'm sure this same thing goes on in China as well.
Well, I'm sure it does, Dr. Stan. And, of course, so little truthful news ever comes out of those meetings, at least in terms of reaching the West or the rest of the world. And most Americans are not aware that most of the information and activity that Americans are ever accessible to in China are the areas that are controlled very well by the government, very closely monitored. If it's not within the special economic zones designated by the Chinese Communist government, it would be within the major cities of Beijing or Shanghai, where there's very close monitoring by the secret police of all activity. So very few Americans or foreigners are going to really find out what is really occurring in that nation.
Well, of course, they have an extensive secret police. What is frightening to me, John, is we're developing a secret police right here in America.
Yes,
they
are.
Want everybody to have an identification card. They want everybody's DNA on file. They're collecting dossiers on Americans. They're tracking your every telephone call. They're tracking everything you buy with a credit card, everything you buy if you have a Safeway or one of these other cards. All of that information is available to the government. And what they're doing is setting up a police state here in America in the name of fighting terrorism. And yet, of course, if any airline were to, of course, pull more than two Muslim people or people from the Middle East out of a line of people going into a plane, that would be considered racial profiling, and that airline, of course, would be subject to fines and all sorts of punishments. So what's wrong with this? Well, it seems that they're really not concerned about the Middle Easterners at all. What they are concerned about is the law-abiding American citizens. How many law-abiding American citizens are terrorists? How many of them law-abiding? How many of the, how many of the people who crashed into the World Trade Center on September 11th were Muslims or were from the Middle East? So why are you targeting the law-abiding American citizens rather than the people from the Middle East? And I would think if I was from the Middle East, I would welcome this sort of thing, because I wouldn't want to be on a plane with one of those terrorists.
I agree.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course our guest is John Spring, and he's just simply saying that in communist China today, the new dictator there appears to be a very, very ruthless individual. Would that be a fair statement?
I think that would be an understatement, Dr. Stan. Hu Jintao came to power by his role in Tibet, in which he suppressed all of the dissidents in a very ruthless manner. They were killed, executed, tortured, not necessarily in that order. Then he eventually made such a good impression with the leaders in Beijing that he became part of the central government, and now he is number one man in charge.
All right, fine. Well, we got Nathan calling from Contra Costa. Hi, Nathan. Do you have a question?
Well, yes, I have a question, but I have a quick bit of information beforehand. It's very disturbing news about red China, communist penetration of our hemisphere. It appears as though red Chinese troops are patrolling Haiti, as we speak, or that at least they're about to. And it's sort of interesting that Father Aristide's government was the only one of the few governments that maintained relations with Taiwan. And I guess it's in that background, could the guest comment on my understanding is that there's a long-standing financial connection between the Bushes and the Chinese communists. Can the guests confirm this? Is it more than just financial? Is there actual possible penetration of this administration? And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank
all right,
you.
Fine. Of course, I think the question is there a relationship between the Bush family and Communist China?
Well, Nathan's brought up a good question, and I don't know if I have the answer that he's exactly looking for, but I'm very much aware that George W. Bush's uncle, Prescott Bush, as I understand, has invested very heavily in the People's Republic of China, as I believe his father, President George Herbert Walker Bush, has as well, as have many members of the former Bush and Reagan administrations, such as General Haig, Henry Kissinger, to name just a few.
And I think that's absolutely right. I'll never forget back in, it was 1989, when, of course, Tiananmen Square occurred, and everybody was expecting that we would do something. We would be indignant. We would withdraw some of the support we had for Communist China. But, of course, after Tiananmen Square and the slaughter of hundreds, if not thousands, of patriotic Chinese who wanted nothing more than liberty, and they had these big pictures of the Statue of Liberty, and they had big signs that said, you know, Abraham Lincoln, yes, and or Thomas Jefferson, yes, and Chairman Mao, no, or something of the sort. And they were just mowed down and slaughtered. And we did absolutely nothing. In fact, at that point, we gave it the most favored nation trading status because George Herbert Walker Bush, his brother, and that's, I'm sure, what you're speaking of,
yes.
The present president's uncle, was heavily invested in Communist China at that time, and they certainly wouldn't want to do anything to interfere with their investments. So I believe that he's absolutely right. I think there's strong financial ties on the part of the Bush family to Communist China. I think there's strong ties to the Carlyle, one of the major corporations working over in the Middle East there, one of the largest privately held corporations in the world, and certainly very close relationship to the Saudi family.
Yes. Nathan, if you're still listening, I would strongly recommend that you read Gordon Thomas's book called Seeds of Fire. Gordon Thomas happened to be in Beijing during the time of the Tiananmen Square massacre. In fact, he stayed there even beyond the time of the massacre to do further investigation of the whole situation. And we had the technology through satellite imagery that was shown at the embassies. We could have warned the leaders of the student dissidents of the troops that were surrounding the capital of China at that time, Beijing, and they could have been warned, so they would have been able to disperse in time, but that would have interfered with big business, trade relations with China, and so that was never done.
And I really hate to say this, but I think that we have people in Washington, D.C., who really have very little concern for human life. They have an entirely different agenda, entirely different worldview. Their real goal is not to individual liberty or freedom or democracy, but this idea of a one-world government, a new world economy, a new world currency, a new world religion. And that's really the driving goal of the ancient mystery religions. It's the driving goal of the leaders of both political parties today. And the fact that most people don't understand what's really going on, that these forces are working behind the scenes, these powerful spiritual forces, why, of course, this is why we're losing, because we don't know who the enemy is. If you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get it. That's Brotherhood of Darkness. Go to our website, pull down our newsletters, get informed, help us to educate America. This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is John Spring. And if you're out there or listening to us across America, Our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. So, John, certainly I share your concern about what's happening in communist China, and of course the fact that certainly our leaders seem to be much more concerned with preserving the dictatorship there in power and increasing their power, increasing their industrial capacity. And this is the frightening thing, is we are giving them the technology and the wherewithal to create the weapons that one day I fear will be used against America and American citizens and against American freedom. Do you share that concern?
I certainly do share that concern, Dr. Stan. As you pointed out, we are losing our ability to manufacture goods which would very much be needed during time of war or national emergency. And even today, our armed forces are dependent upon goods manufactured overseas, and many of those goods are manufactured in communist China. Now, speaking of communist China, another concern that I have about Hu Jintao is that there is a possibility that he may consider in the very near future the invasion of Taiwan, which was promised several years ago to occur by the year 2005. Now, if he were to do it in 2004, it would have to occur within a relatively short time frame before the winter seas come about, the rough seas of the winter storms, which would inhibit such an invasion of Taiwan, especially along the Formosa or Taiwan Straits. But next spring, that's an entirely different situation. From next spring until next fall of 2005, such an invasion is very much a possibility. If you have someone such as Hu Jintao, who is determined to invade Taiwan. And many military analysts believe that by the year 2005 that communist China will have the ability to almost equalize the naval forces that would be used to defend Taiwan. So it's a very serious situation, and of course the government of Taiwan wishes to remain free. They have spoken out against the wishes even of our own State Department in those areas, but they are a determined people who want to have a free republic.
Hold that thought there for just a moment, John, please, as we bring other stations on. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is John Spring. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And John has been talking about his concern about a Chinese communist invasion of Taiwan. The Taiwanese people want to remain free, and of course the Chinese communists want to bring them under their control and domination. This has been their goal and objective for a long period of time. You must understand that the philosophy is no one is to be free. Everybody is to be under control, whether they be in Hong Kong, whether they be in Macau, whether they be in on Taiwan. And, of course, this whole idea that control over everything, this is what motivates the people, and, of course, crushing this element of freedom and religious freedom. And this is what will happen when Taiwan falls, and I think it's only a matter of time, because I believe our country will betray Taiwan as we betrayed the people of Cuba, as we betrayed certainly the people of China back in 1949, as we betrayed the people of Iran, as we betrayed the people of Rhodesia. And you say, well, don't you have anything good to say about our country? And I say, I love America. I do what I do because I want to preserve it. But I'm pointing out that there are people within our State Department, whether the Republicans or the Democrats be in power, who have a different agenda. And this is all covered in a wonderful book written by Bill Clinton's mentor. The book is called Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time. The mentor was Professor Carol Quigley, and he will tell you, if you read his book from page 945 to the end of the chapter, that's 945 to the end of the chapter, that all of these crazy right-wingers believe that there are communists working on our government, and communists working on the New York Times, and communists working at Harvard University. And of course, they don't understand. It's not the communists. It's the Anglo-American establishment. And of course, these are people of great wealth and great culture and great knowledge, but they maybe just don't quite make things always work out the way they want to, but they believe in this idea of a world government under a ruling aristocracy, and Professor Carol Quigley agreed with them totally. We can't have freedom in the world. We have to have a ruling elite. After all, if there's not a ruling elite, why the rabble, the common people like you and I? His term was the petty bourgeois who voted for Barry Goldwater, would dominate the world, and it wouldn't be anywhere near as wonderful it'll be if we return to a ruling aristocracy. That's the plan, and it won't be just for America, it'll be for the whole world. The trouble is we've got communists who are ruthless, that's what they want. We have socialists who are ruthless, that's what they want. We have Muslims who are ruthless, that's what they want, and we all seem to be heading in exactly the same direction. The only question is who's ultimately going to be in power, and I don't think any of them are. But that's for another evening. Well, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And John is saying that he is very concerned about the leadership of China. Pick the story up from there, John.
Well, as I mentioned earlier, Hu Jintao is currently in control of Beijing. He has been able to consolidate all power. He now has control of the military. And all he needs to do is wait for the best time to invade Taiwan. I personally think that if he's going to invade during this year, it's going to have to be very soon, possibly before or just after the election, because once the winter seas come about, the storms of winter, it would be very difficult to carry out such a naval invasion.
But why do you think they're going to do it now rather than putting it off perhaps until after the Olympics in 2008? After all, if they were to become an aggressive country at the present time, well, they would tend to lose the advantage they're getting of being the host to the World Olympics. That means so much to them in 2008. Some people think that they will not take the action until after 2008. Do you think they might gamble beforehand, thinking we would have forgotten the ruthless slaughter that will occur when they try to take the freedom away from the people of Taiwan? Don't you think that in some respects they might lose more than they would gain, at least doing it now while America is still at least potentially strong, and wait until we're so weak we won't be able to respond?
Well, there is that to be said, but at the same time, Dr. Stan, if they were to invade Taiwan, let's say this coming fall or this next spring of 2005, they are also they've also studied the American perspective in terms of the memory of the average American, and they understand full well that if such an operation is carried out in the very near future, by let's say the latest time conservatively being 2005, that by the year 2008, most Americans will have forgotten all about the invasion of Taiwan. The news media would have suppressed it fairly well by that time period. And the games would go on as usual. Business would go on as usual with Beijing after a slight setback. So I think from a military perspective and possibly a business and pragmatic perspective, sooner rather than later might be more effective. And now that's just my thought, and I could be entirely wrong. I think it is going to be determined by the Chinese, not by Washington or Moscow. So whenever the Chinese assess the situation, that's when they're going to make their move.
All right. Well, it's going to be very interesting to see. I think that you're absolutely right. They want it. I'm hoping it'll be later rather than sooner.
I'm hoping it will never occur.
All right. Well, but I think that there are forces working behind the scenes. I think that one thing, of course, the last thing they would want to do would really be get the American people concerned. On the other hand, of course, America really is stretched very, very thin. I mean, our troops, we have troops in something like 140 nations throughout the world. We have the largest military budget, I think is what, $430 billion. The next 20 countries of the world don't have a budget combined similar to ours. How long can we continue to finance this when we're the greatest debtor nation in the world? In fact, we're having to rely upon $1.5 billion to $1.6 to $1.7 billion a day being given to us by other countries. They come in and buy our bonds, because if they weren't buying our bonds, why, the whole financial structure of America would come down, or maybe they're waiting for America to implode financially and then, of course, attack Taiwan. What do you think? Would that be a possibility?
Well, that's also a possibility, but then you have to also consider the possibility of a terrorist operation being carried out by a nation such as Iran in the very near future. If that were to occur here in the United States, similar to another 9/11, we would be momentarily or psychologically crippled, at least for a while, and during that time frame, they could very well take advantage of an invasion of Taiwan. And then there's another factor that we have to keep aware of, and that's North Korea. North Korea has recently had two rather strange explosions within the last few months, and according to an interview I had with Josef Adansky several months ago, the North Koreans have successfully dug to depths of over 2,000 meters, that's 2 kilometers, about a mile and a third beneath the Earth's surface, and they have built bunkers and facilities for the manufacture, production of missiles and nuclear warheads, and at such depths, satellite imagery does not detect very much. And we don't know if these are nuclear tests or if they are so-called natural eruptions of a volcanic origin. We honestly don't know, apparently, even though they have somewhat of a mushroom-shaped type of cloud.
Well, I can't believe we don't know. All you have to do, of course, is check, and you can determine whether or not a nuclear weapon has been put off by simply checking the air and finding out if there's evidence of nuclear explosion. So I think that what they're doing is concealing the truth from the American people. And, of course, one of the biggest things that they're concealing from the American people is who is financing the North Vietnamese government, the wicked government there that is oppressive of the people, and, you know, as this really is a total slave state, abject subjection, you know, in North Korea. Why?
Yes.
Our tax dollars. We're pouring money in there for the way of food. We're pouring money in there as far as oil. We're pouring money in there as far as building a nuclear reactor. At least we were. We are keeping that government alive. Why would we do anything so stupid? Oh, for humanitarian purposes. You know, do you really think that having sent money to Adolf Hitler during the Second World War because some of the Germans were starving would have helped the Germans there? And you'd say, well, that's the most ridiculous thing in the world. Do you think sending money to Mugabe in Zimbabwe today because people are starving in Zimbabwe is going to help the people? Of course not. So why are we sending massive amounts of food and aid and oil to the government of North Korea in the name of helping the people? What we're doing is, of course, allowing the ruthless dictatorship to stay in power. But then, of course, people have forgotten. We were the largest financier or provider of humanitarian aid to the wicked Taliban. And we have George Bush's speech on the 20th of September 2001 saying just that very thing. Yeah. The United States is the largest supplier of humanitarian aid to the Taliban. Hey, I thought they were terrible people. They were oppressing women. They were cutting off people's hands and feet. And they were a ruthless, tyrannical regime. And they were. And who was financing him? Why, American tax dollars. So maybe things aren't anywhere near what they appear to be.
Well, Dr. Sten, regarding North Korea, I think the American people should wake up to the fact that the North Koreans now have the same missile capability as do the Chinese.
Well, where did they get the technology? They got it from the Chinese. Where did the Chinese get it from? They got it from the United States.
Yes.
Why did we give it to them? Oh, well, that wicked Bill Clinton wanted to get $100,000 or $200,000 in campaign contributions. Bill Clinton didn't need that money. That wasn't the reason he transferred the technology to the Chinese communists. When are the American people going to sit up and think and question what we're being told?
Yes, but what they should be told is, realistically speaking, that North Korea now has the same capacity as China has, which is, in essence, the ability to launch a long-range missile with a nuclear warhead and hit any target, any city in the United States.
I'm sure that they do, and but of course we're giving the tech. North Korea has given the technology to Pakistan.
And
it's given the technology to Iran. It's given the technology to Libya, and of course Pakistan has given the technology and has actually given the missiles and nuclear warheads to Saudi Arabia. This is what you're not being told. And the Middle East is presently a powder keg at the present time, and the average American goes blithely along his way, totally oblivious of the fact that we're on the verge of nuclear war, and nobody really understands. Our attention is focused on what's happening in the Middle East. Our attention is focused on who's going to win the Super Bowl this year. Our attention is focused on all sorts of nonsensical things like whether we get a Democrat or Republican regime in the White House, and they're both going to carry out exactly the same programs. So, but we're not looking at the very real threat that I believe exists in the Middle East today as we move towards World War III. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or 464-8295. If you agree or you disagree, give us a call. Well, John, I agree with you totally. I think that we should be very concerned about the threat of North Korea, but it almost appears like it's the best enemy that money could buy.
Well, it is, when you think about it. We have given them so much in the way of humanitarian aid, provided them with large quantities of petroleum, and now we have missiles and nuclear warheads pointed directly at us.
And this incredible thing was, I think it was about 1994, they promised to stop working on nuclear warheads. If we'd simply give them the oil, we would build some sort of a nuclear reactor for them and continue giving them food. Now, supposedly then they cheated on the agreement. And of course they were continuing to develop nuclear warheads. I do not for one minute believe that our CIA doesn't know everything that's going on, in North Korea at the present time.
I
think that they just do not want the American people to know what we know. They can monitor everything from satellites. Believe me, they have agents on the ground, and if they don't have agents on the ground, other countries have agents on the ground. I mean, we've worked in concert with Mossad and with the intelligence agencies of countries all throughout the world. They know what's going on in North Korea. They just don't want the American people to know that they knew that since 1994, the North Koreans have been cheating. Because, after all, if the North Koreans were cheating, how could we possibly justify, continuing to provide them with food and of course technology and petroleum and if the American people realized that they had kept 8,000 American soldiers after the Korean War ended, and some of them are still prisoners in North Korea, or perhaps they've sent off to Moscow for experiments on them. And those who haven't read the book we carry by Dr. Joe Douglas Betrayed really need to get it and read it and understand what happened to so many of our prisoners of war. The American people knew how they'd experimented and tortured and killed our prisoners. Maybe they wouldn't be so happy just to go along and continue financing this ruthless, truly ruthless regime.
That is so true, Dr. Sen. Just like soldiers and veterans from the Korean War, the Second World War, and the Vietnam War, there are many American soldiers and military personnel from the Vietnam War that have ended up in Siberia, Russia, China, and other communist nations throughout the world. And the American people are unaware of that, just as we are unaware that KAL Flight 007 did not explode in midair at 30,000 feet, but rather was able to make a landing. And all of those passengers aboard that flight were alive and captured by the Russians and have remained in the gulags for over two decades now.
I believe that is true. Do you have anybody that pretty could talk to us about that? Because there are people in Washington, D.C. who've studied this, who know what's going on, but of course their voice has been muted by the controlled media. Do you know anybody who could talk about that for us?
Well, two names come to my mind. First of all, Ben Torrey and Bert Schlossberg.
You're right. We've actually interviewed both of those.
Yes. They seem to be about the best informed that I've come across on that topic. In addition to his work with research along that line, Ben Torrey's also very knowledgeable about what's going on in Korea, because he is hoping someday to have a mission into North Korea, if that ever is a possibility.
All right, fine. Well, we're going to be back here in just a moment to wrap up this evening's program. And I think we actually have a four-tape set on what happened to 007. We even have some of the government documents that go into that that came out of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. So if you'd like to get you can get the book on 007. You can get that information. We have an excellent four-tape set. And then, of course, we also have in fact, I even think we have a 007 special. We have the government documents that you're never going to hear about elsewhere. We'll be right back here in just a moment to wrap up the program. Well, John, we've got about 3 minutes before we have to let you go. And for our listeners out there, John has his own radio program in Southern California. Do you want to tell our listeners how they can listen to you?
Well, here in Southern California, we're serving primarily the Inland Empire, but our station's call letters are KSPA, and we are 1510 on the AM dial, and we're hoping to expand into the San Diego area in the very near future, but we do need listener support. Our mailing address is care of my name, John W. Spring, Post Office Box 18946, Anaheim, California. Again, that's one post office box, 18946, Anaheim, California, and the zip code is 92817. And when we're on the air every Sunday at 4 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, our toll-free number is 1-866-584-3434. And you can call that number from any place throughout the United States.
And, of course, John is doing a tremendous job. They've taken most of the conservative voices off the air in Southern California, but he's still there. And is Kevin Beerley still doing programs?
Yes, he is.
Well, at least we got two voices down there that are really a strict conservative. We've got a few of the old-timers. I think George Putman's still doing it. Does he have really insight into what's going on? Is he more a doctrinaire Republican?
Well, he's a fiscal conservative Democrat, and he's on our station, KSPA, Monday through Friday from 12 noon until 2 p.m.
All right.
But his views and my views are not necessarily always the same, but I encourage people to listen to him Monday through Friday on our station, KSPA 1510 on the AM dial.
Well, he certainly is a tradition. He's been around for 50 years doing talk radio, and so George Putman is certainly one of the leaders of the conservative movement. But, of course, there's so much here that the average individual doesn't know. We've got about 30 seconds. What are your parting thoughts for our listeners tonight, John?
Well, I'm urging all of our listeners to keep praying for our free republic, the United States of America, to give our leaders wisdom, to give our citizens insight and spiritual discernment on how we should deal with these situations, because every day now we're going to be faced with very difficult decisions.
Amen to that. We're in real trouble as a nation because we've lost our moral foundation, and if America doesn't turn back to God, why, I don't believe God will ever again bless America. Thanks so much for being with us, John. I really appreciate it, and look forward to the next time we can be together.
Well, it's been a pleasure, and the Lord continue to bless you with your ministry, Dr. Sam.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And our guest this evening has been John Spring. Always a pleasure having him here with us. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course, this is the time when I have to remind our listeners out across America that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we're really dependent upon those of you who believe in what we're doing to help us. And, of course, you can do that by calling us at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. 888-344-8927. Of course, you can join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, or you can get our simply subscribe to our newsletter at that number. And, of course, as you know, we're on the air somewhere across America, 5 hours by radio every day, 5 hours on the Internet, and, of course, you can link up with us at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. For the last half of our afternoon and for our evening program, you can get a 2 hours of the afternoon program on GCNLive.com, our early morning program on AmericanNewsNet.com, that's AmericanNewsNet.com, GCNLive.com, and RadioLiberty.com. And, of course, we have 4 hours now on the shortwave, and our shortwave audience is growing. Your job is to tell other people about our shortwave programs and encourage them to listen. And if you want to get the, of course, the frequencies, go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. In the central part of the United States, at Central Time, it would be then from 5 to 7 in the evening on 9.430 megahertz shortwave. And then, of course, from 10 to 12, this is Central Time, 10 to 12 in the evening, on 7.535 megahertz or 7.315 megahertz. 7.535 or 7.315 megahertz, and your job is to tell other people to get them listening as we begin trying to educate people about the spiritual nature of the battle in which we're engaged. If you haven't, of course, read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get it. And, of course, we carry Professor Quigley's book, Tragedy and Hope, a book that was suppressed for many years. In fact, somebody came in and bought up the publisher, Macmillan, and destroyed the plates the first half of that book because they did not want the American people to know the truth about the secret society that controlled the American State Department. And if you think that's a ridiculous statement to make, we have an interview with Professor Carol Quigley, who was a liberal historian that taught at Harvard and Princeton before he went to Georgetown University and became the mentor to a future president of the United States, William Jefferson Clinton. And, of course, if you read William Jefferson's Clinton's acceptance speech at the Democrat nomination for the presidency back, in other words, he was accepting the Democrat nomination. This was in 1992. He talked about Professor Quigley. And, in fact, Bill Clinton even gave the first inaugural Professor Quigley lecture at Georgetown University. So Professor Quigley was Bill Clinton's mentor and explained how, of course, Cecil Rhodes and the Rhodes Scholarships and the Council on Foreign Relations all tied together. With this little group of people of great power and great wealth and banking interests who were intent upon the New World Order and the New World Religion. And if you want to document anything I'm saying, I suggest my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, Professor Quigley's book, entitled Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time, and, of course, our secret government four-tape set, which includes the interview with Professor Quigley and the book Foundations, The Power and Influence, and so much information you need to understand what indeed is going on in the world today. So we do hope that many of you will want to get the information. I want to remind you about the all-day seminar we're having here in the North Shore of Monterey Bay on the 6th of November. And if you're interested in coming, an all-day seminar with lunch included, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. They're going to be holding an Institute of the Constitution over in Salinas every Saturday morning for the next 5 Saturdays. If you'd like to attend that, call 877-448-5798. That's 877-448-5798. Once more, 877-448-5798. If you didn't get the number, give us a call. And then pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for Radio Liberty for our provision and protection. Until tomorrow at the same time, may the Lord be with you.